All right. All right. Yes, I did.
Pardon?
I turn on now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's good. Thank you.
All right.
I'm going to, one quick thing, as long as I'm up. So there is a bathroom, in case people don't know. It's down this hallway, the second door on the left. And I'm going to adjust this down a little bit with this many people. We seem to be doing well on heat.
All right. So as I mentioned earlier, our topic is on preliminary practice. And actually, for this year, public talk, it is designed to develop complete Dharma practice. I am not sure exactly whether you notice or not, but my intention is that I started giving teachings on preliminary practices earlier, including talking about refuge vows and presenting actual refuge vow. And we also talk other topics earlier. So today is an integration of all the teachings that I presented to you this year, probably previous years too. So anyhow, as Bob mentioned, that today I'll be talking preliminary practice, but then it is also designed to continue our gradual path into cultivating bodhicitta or enlightened thought or altruistic thoughts and its action, the next. And then it leads to the actual practices, especially recognizing nature mind, which is the most important part of the Buddhist teaching, especially according to Mahayana, Tantrayana practices. So you will see continuation of public talk that actually is designed to cultivate complete practice for one individual to actualize realization or transformation life. Okay, so going back to today's topic, preliminary practice. So I have several outlines and I'm going to mention that. So we have two parts: the importance of preliminary practice and also the actual practice. So the first part, the importance of preliminary, I want to describe the actual term of preliminary in Tibetan language, and then I will share you some of the benefits of engaging with preliminary practice. And after that, I would share you reasons why we need to engage preliminary practice at the beginning, instead of reversing, do the actual first and do the preliminary, or there is no preliminary practice at all in our practice. And after that, I will then present some of the, different models of preliminary practice in all Buddhist traditions, starting from Theravada to Mahayana Bodhisattva and to the Vajrayana. And then at the end, I would like to share, before that I will share you the actual practice, how to do it. And then at the very end, I will share you my personal recommendation, what might be more suitable for Westerners because of different culture, different concepts. There's a lot of struggles to engage with the traditional Mondo practice, and so we can have some discussions how to come up westernize preliminary practice. Okay? All right. So let's go back to the first outline. So the first is, what is the original term in Tibetan for the preliminary practice? So preliminary practice in Tibetan, it's called Ngondo. Ngondo. Ngondo literally means practices that needs to happen before the actual practice. Okay? Ngondo, like preliminary practices. So Ngondo or preliminary practice itself indicates that there are three phases of practice, relatively. So we have preliminary practice, Ngondo practice, and then naturally we'll have actual practice. Whatever the actual practice you do, then of course we would have ending or closing practices. So when you engage with these three, that means now we have a complete practice. Then the question is, why do we need to do complete practices? Why not just do the actual sit on cushion chair, do the meditation, and then done with that? And there's no need of doing all traditional things, and it's just a waste of time, and I don't need them. Or we'll do the actual practice, and then there's no closing, there's no closure, and that means there's no continuation to the next actual practice or preliminary practice. So, if I answer myself, why do we need to do these three phases of practice? It's quite clear that if one of the practice is missing, and especially if the preliminary practice is missing, then whatever practice we do, whatever change we make in our life, maybe some health changes that we want to make, maybe we want to change how we live, change our lifestyles with food or appearance. So if there is no preliminary practice, then the actual practice will be there maybe for a short time, and then it disappears. There's no continuation, there's no retention, or there's no maintenance. There's no continuation. That's because probably preliminary practice is missing. But even we have the preliminary and the actual phase of practice, but if there is no dedication, or if there is no ending phase, any phase in Buddhist practice includes two practices. So usually we say dedication. The other one is expressing wishes. So we usually call dedication and auspicious thoughts. I guess the auspicious thoughts could be best wishes in the West. But you do it in secular form, but we do it in a Dharma practices. So at the end. So anyhow, so whatever practices, changes we make, if these three components are not completed, basically then the change would be less effective. And we may go back to the same cycle again and again, again, again. All right? Okay. So, so that means we really need to focus more on the preliminary practices. So let me share you more what preliminary practice means. First of all, preliminary practice is also considered as a foundation practice. So without a foundation, then even we start some actual practices, the actual practice doesn't last long. Then it is like some kind of excitement at the beginning, and then it kind of disappears after a week or month or maybe several months. The foundation practice or preliminary practice actually are, although it is called preliminary foundation practice, but it includes so much of the essential practices, actually they are actual practice. Although we call a foundation of the house, but the foundation of house is really important part of the house itself. But anyhow, so my point is that the preliminary practice, foundation practice, cannot be viewed as less important or incomplete. Actually, it is more important than the actual practice and can be more complete than the actual practice. So because of that, it is really indispensable factor to spend more time with our preliminary practices. Okay. I'll give you one example. First of all, over here, and you might hear from other places, that you basically, Buddhist meditation classical teaching summarizes all different types into two. And the first one is called Shamatha, and the second phase is called Vipassana. So Shamatha meaning combination of concentration, mindfulness, and recollection. So those three combined makes Shamatha meditation. So the Vipassana is able to see things as it is. So it is more insight, more the wisdom component. So here's what happens. The reason why we need to practice and spend more time on Shamatha is better Shamatha practice naturally brings Vipassana practice. Now this relates to all preliminary practice. It's a trick for us. So if we focus on all the preliminary practice, the reason why it is so important is that all the preliminary practice naturally brings the actual practices without much effort. And this has a very good reason. From a Buddhist point of view, about law of causality, cause and effect. If all the cause and conditions are there and there's no obstacle, then the result is inevitable. No one can stop, no one can interfere. So that means having a good solid foundation really naturally brings the actual practices. Okay, so therefore sometimes it is really very, very safe to do the foundation practice instead of focusing too much on the Vipassana actual practices. So let me give you an example from a clinical example. So whatever people come to work with, especially trauma or anxiety or depression, the very first focus is creating stability and feeling sense of secure and building the confidence. And that is really the first phase of treatment, working in clinical setting. And once that phase, let's say now the person feels secure, stable, like having shine practice or shamatha practice. And now I can work with the actual phase of working with the actual trauma. But if I do the opposite, work with the trauma from the beginning without creating this stability and safety, grounding techniques, then person may able to cope with traumatic symptom, but person will relapse again and again, because there's no good foundation, okay? So what I'm saying is, from a clinical perspective, foundation primary practice is more important than the actual practice. When you do Dharma practice, it is also same that doing preliminary practice is more important than the actual practices. Okay. So then, what is the benefit of doing preliminary practices? So I have mentioned several of the benefits, but the most benefit is, as I mentioned earlier, is actually I have already mentioned the most benefit, that it comes naturally. That seems to be the most beneficial. So I will leave it that. But I want to share what are the reasons why do we need to do preliminary practice or mantra practice. So one of the challenges in the West has to do some of the Buddhist concepts that are maybe foreign. I'm not sure, that's what I was told. So I'm following in that case. So the source of the need to do preliminary practice has to do the two concepts. It's called accumulation in Tibetan. And there are two types of accumulation. So one is accumulation of merit or virtuous deed. And the other one is accumulation of wisdom or insight. Okay. So in order to actualize the transformation, it is suggested that person needs to these two things. So we are accumulating positive qualities, internal positive qualities. At the same time, when we engage these two, it also then transforms the non-virtuous deeds, or the opposite of inside wisdom can be ignorance or delusions or lack of understanding of what is reality. Okay. So in order to accumulate merit and wisdom, then we come up these wonderful practices. So I will mention what are the wonderful practices that are related to this later on. Okay. So I'm just showing you what is the sources of wonderful concept, wonderful that relates to accumulation of true practices and transformation of the opposite too. Okay. Now let's talk about some examples based on three Buddhist schools. So the first, according to the first, Theravadin, so in Tibetan Buddhism, we call it general Buddhism. General Buddhism, Theravadin tradition is viewed as general Buddhism or foundational Buddhism or the basis of Buddhism or classical Buddhism, how it is called. So within the Theravadin or general Buddhist practices, the preliminary practice is first to take refuge vow. And this means person who becomes Buddhist according to the ceremonial process, so taking refuge. And I say that ceremonial because there is a philosophical base becoming Buddhist. So I'll come back. So ceremonially, person takes refuge vow. And so that becomes the first basis of all preliminary practices. Okay? So these vows, ethics, actually are considered as preliminary practice, like the foundation. So once someone takes refuge vow, then it leads to, depending on what kind of commitment we make in our life. So lay persons take five precepts. And I talked last time what are the five precepts. And they are really, really similar to monastic main precepts. Okay, some adaptation, but really similar. Okay. So let's say now person has taken refuge vow and taken five precepts. Then the very first practice, the actual practice can be practice of mindfulness. Okay. Now mindfulness practice is actually the very first practice out of 37 paths to enlightenment according to Theravadin system. But then practicing mindfulness includes so many following practices. So just doing mindful practice, you're doing 37 practices. So number doesn't matter. What matters is how we do the practice and how it generates, involves different practices. Okay? Now, so in Theravadin tradition, the two meditation that I mentioned are also like especially the Shine practice, concentration. Although I see that in the West, many Vipassana teachers, Western Vipassana teachers, tend to focus more on the Vipassana. But all the traditional Buddhist teaching scriptures, according to Theravadin, actually includes Shamatha as a prerequisite for Vipassana. And I see that with Govinka's program, if you happen to go to on Alaska for 10-day retreats, he includes how concentration is important as a foundation practice. According to Theravadin practice, so take refuge, take the five precepts if layperson or monastic different vows, and then do either mindfulness practice or shamatha or combination of mindfulness, shamatha, and then that eventually leads to vipassana. Okay, so this is how I actually notice and understand is once we have a stable mind by doing shamatha practice or mindfulness, once our mind settles on one object most of the time, then actually we naturally see the impermanence of our breathing, the impermanence of the sound that we hear. So that's what that is my point, that if we settled our mind without putting so much effort to gain the experience impermanence, it just happens. Okay? And especially if we put so much effort, then that creates more obstacle than improving our practices. So sometimes we just need to know when to engage with the antidotes and when not to. Okay. So if our mind is resting, staying on one object most of the time, then we just don't need to do anything. And if we rest mind like that, then we will gain naturally vipassana or insight, realizations, transformations. It happens like that. Okay. So now, part of the mantra practice in Theravadin, I also notice including the four practices of loving kindness, compassion, empathic joy or rejoicing, and equanimity. Okay, so those four mindfulness practice can become preliminary practices according to Theravadin traditions or common or general Buddhist practice. So we need to start from there, actually. All the Tibetan Buddhism starts from Theravadin. There's lots of misunderstanding in the West that Tibetan Buddhism is Vajrayana, so therefore there's no any connection, no practices. That's not true. All the monastic, especially vows, precepts, actually starts from the Theravadin monastic practices, and then it integrates to Mahayana Bodhisattva vow and Vajrayana vow and practices. Okay, so now let me share you the preliminary practice from Mahayana Bodhisattva. So again, Mahayana Bodhisattva is a different level. So you are actually continuing. You're not like studying this Mahayana Bodhisattva preliminary practice without doing the Theravadin practices. First you do this. Now let's say you have done Theravadin practice, and basically from Tibetan Buddhist point of view, understanding that Theravadin path and results are primarily designed for one individual to reach nirvana. Okay, so that means, although it includes loving kindness, compassion, but really the primary practice is self-care, self-awareness, self-transformation, self-compassion, self-loving. I think that's one of the reasons why Vipassana practice, mindfulness practice, are very, very popular in the West, both in the West and in Europe. Because there's a lot of concern. I don't know what the reason. There's a lot of lack of self-compassion, self-love. That means more self-loathing and hate and dislikeness. Dislikeness of the appearance, dislikeness of the whatever, the thoughts, emotions. And so that one is very, very confusing for many Eastern teachers coming to the West. So you can see that Western, I cannot say exactly, there might be lots of emphasis on taking care of others. Maybe that's why I'm saying earlier, going too fast with the actual practice will not last long, will not be helpful. So therefore, we first need to go to the foundation practice of self-care, self-awareness, self-compassion, self-loving. And now let's say you have reached comfortable with that practice. You are happier, you are satisfied, you are more peaceful, calmer, more accepting, more kinder. But if you stay there forever, then that will be extreme. Then that will become to the extreme of selfish, self-centered. So we don't want to. So because of that, whenever we feel comfortable with ourself, and now we move to the next level, and that is Mahayana Bodhisattva. Mahayana Bodhisattva, again, primary practice is thinking and helping others, primarily. Secondarily, still maintain the self-care. You cannot have a Bodhisattva who is burnout and very, very unstable, helping too much, and then one suffers. We don't want to have that with Bodhisattvas. So that's why Bodhisattva practice shifts the priority and the focus from self to other, yet maintaining the self-care, self-awareness, okay? So now you see how we are maintaining our practices. We are not eliminating Theravadan practice, okay? Because it seems people do like higher and lower. But although I'm sharing you different level, and all these level are not a higher or lower. These actually, just to explain, we say higher levels. But in reality, morning, when we are taking care of ourselves, primarily, from Buddhist point of view, we are Theravadin. And that is totally fine. That is the practice. But then afternoon, you reach very, very different state of mind where you are maintaining your self-awareness, but you are helping, benefiting others. And now you reach to the Bodhisattva person, Bodhisattva level, okay? So while you're Bodhisattva, suddenly, primarily, you really need to take care of yourself. And now you go back to the Theravadin. Okay, so it's going like this, not like this, okay? Going like this, or like that, all kinds of things. So that's why it's our myth that we improve like this. That is the myth what creates addiction at the first place. So if someone drinks alcohol or use substance or any form of addiction, the myth is that if I drink more and more, I will feel higher and higher and better and better. Of course, that motivates person to drink more. Right? But the fact is that it really doesn't go this way. It fluctuates. Even drinking alcohol, during the alcohol substance in our system, we may feel a little bit higher, but when it dissipates, then we naturally come down. Okay? And then next time, we may go up like this. Okay, so let's go back to the Bodhisattva. Okay, so Bodhisattva practice on top of Theravada, the main preliminary practice is practice of compassion. There is a one citation, and there's a dialogue between Buddha and one of the disciples. The question is, if there is one path that encompasses all the path, what that would be? And so Buddha's response is, that would be compassion. Now, it may not make sense how compassion can be the one path that encompasses all. It really depends how you define it. But let me share you from a Buddhist definition what compassion is. Then we will know whether compassion includes all the path or excludes. So first of all, compassionate mind is a mental state or trait that aspires to free from the suffering and sources of suffering. So let's say I cultivate that thought, that state of mind. Now I'm very busy. I'll be putting lots of thoughts, lots of energies, how to free from the suffering. Then I'll be engaging with the studies, learn about methods. Maybe I will study more on human suffering, all the complex suffering. And that may lead to studying more about the sources of suffering. So let's say now I reduce and free suffering, and also free the sources of suffering. That is same as experiencing happiness. That is experiencing peaceful mind. So there's no separate teaching and method besides freeing from the suffering and freeing from the sources of suffering. In addition to that, compassion also has its own sub-preliminary practices. Although there are many methods, but one of the methods, preliminary methods, is first step, cultivation of equanimity, or equanimity meaning understanding of universal understanding, how all of us want to be happy and not to be suffered. So if we have that understanding, that will naturally brings this practice not to be too attached with one's close one and not to be indifferent to the enemies, because both are equally from a deeper level, same as us. So therefore, then that becomes a ground, good fertile soil. Now out of that, then cultivating loving kindness, and then cultivating compassion, and then rejoicing. Then that will lead to cultivation of bodhicitta, enlightenment thought. And then that will lead to practice of six paramitas, or six perfections, or six altruistic actions. And then pretty soon you'll be practicing union of compassion and wisdom. I noticed that there's a latest term in the West for the same concept, same practice. Someone has already copyrighted and made million dollars, and that's called emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, Daniel Coleman wrote a book. If you look at that, inside the content, it's really not different from what Buddhists are talking, the union or the integration of both compassion and wisdom. Okay, so now let's talk about Vajrayana preliminary practices. Okay, so how about I will take some questions? Yes.
Well, Geshe, I was when you mentioned in the Theravada practice to develop a relaxed mindset,
mm-hmm.
not grinding away, let's say, not gritting your teeth and trying to concentrate.
Right.
Does that apply to all the preliminary practices to be supposed? For instance, the compassion part.
Right.
When you move into Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just seemed like that was a good suggestion. It kind of sparked my interest because I try really hard to concentrate, and the harder I try, the more difficult it gets.
Right. So the general teaching is the compassion is the most indispensable factor for our spiritual life, for enlightenment, for secular life. So then the question is, how can we practice? Then usually Buddhist divides into three. So first, cultivate compassion towards oneself or one's close ones, assuming that that's more comfortable and easier, motivating. And then after that, then cultivate loving kindness, compassion to others, then to the stranger. So stranger meaning then to everyone. So that's how I think I understand how practice of compassion works. And because you mentioned that, actually I have this thought before all of these thoughts, and somehow I didn't mention, forgot, and that is one of the main benefits, I guess I share and then I stop and went to the reason. So one of the main benefits of preliminary practice, all the preliminary practice are designed to motivate, to inspire us. I didn't mention other practices that require more reflection. So, for example, now we're talking what preliminary practice might be suitable for you, okay? So if the practice of reflecting on impermanent motivates you to engage with your value of life, then you do practice reflection on the impermanence. But if mindfulness practice motivates you, inspire you, engage you, then you do that as your preliminary practice. Okay. So really, that is one of the main things that I want to share, is that preliminary practice are really designed to motivate, inspire us. And so you choose which one functions that for you. Okay. Now let me go back to the Vajrayana. So for Vajrayana, a preliminary, the first practice is taking refuge. And not only taking refuge, but recitation of 100,000. And sometimes practitioners include full prostration, physically full prostration, verbally reciting refuge prayers, and mentally focusing on these practices. So mind, speech, and body all are engaging in what is called accumulation of merits. Okay. So that is the first. The second one is practice of cultivating bodhicitta. So again, the Vajrayana is a continuation of Theravadin, Mahayana Bodhisattva. And now one cultivates bodhicitta. And so these mode of practice are recommended to do 100,000 times. So if you hear 100,000 times of commercial, same commercial, would that affect you? 100,000 times. 100,000 times. So so if that is true, then whatever we recite, we choose to recite 100,000 times, that will change our, that will bring the transformation. That will really change. So I know sometimes in the West, especially those of you are brought or raised doing prayers, and then you find prayer in Buddhist, not main practice, but part of the practice, and then you feel, oh, this is, well, I come here because I don't want to do the prayer, and now I'm doing prayers. We have to leave the prayer concept as it is. We need to focus on the actual function of what prayer does. Okay? So we are focusing more on the function of prayer and leaving the prayer itself neutrally somewhere. If we do that, so prayers are commercial. They're commercial recitations. And we're saying this again and again and again and again. And what I notice from my clinical experience, I notice that actually prayer works, first of all. Because it works the same as if you feel depressed, and sometimes if you talk about it, you feel better. Okay? So if you do the prayer, it's another form of expression. It's not the divine is helping us. It is the human qualities that we actually process and talk, and then we feel good, and now we give credit to someone, super beings, out of us. So I usually say, give the credit to human beings who are really doing the actual work, and they are giving, receiving the result, and then let ourselves to take the benefit of it. So I'm not sure how that came up. I came up with quite emotional. Okay. So, all right. So we're talking about these numbers, okay? So numbers are also designed to bring quite a significant change. So if we have a certain number and we train that way, then there's some consistency. So if we have a goal of 100, then we may actually reach closer. And by that time, then there might be some results. But if we are doing it randomly once a while, can be beneficial. But since there's no continuation, so it may have less effectiveness of it. Okay. All right. So now let me mention about other practices. The other practice is recitation of Vajrasattva practice. And this has to do with visualization. One of the things that I like Vajrayana practice is Vajrayana practice is, first of all, not for everyone. Even Theravadin practice is not for everyone. So any practice is not for everyone. But if you like the creativeness, if you like to create, then Vajrayana practice would be a great practice. So you could actually visualize yourself as the transformed enlightened being, and then you visualize certain imaginations, and it begins the transformation or transforming process. But anyhow, visualization, through visualization, then the practice of purification. Just the purpose of accumulating merit, okay? But if you are practicing on just the philosophical view, and philosophical views, if that is only practice, then I guess there's no need of transformation. Because highest philosophical view is already transformed. So why bother to transform? There's nothing to transform. Everything is perfect. So that is the philosophical view. But that is what Dzogchen says. That is many schools say. But even that type of practice, still there is this practice. For those of you who have received Dzogchen practice, this is the Ngondro textbook in order to do the actual Dzogchen practice. Okay, so you will find like this. This is a Denshu Rinpoche. This is Nyingma tradition, this is Sakya, and this is also one of the preliminary practices. But of course, it's in so detail. Okay? All right. So, okay. So then there's the practice of Guru Yoga. So I'm going to mention about Guru Yoga a little bit. Guru Yoga meaning yoga in this context means practice. So Guru Yoga meaning relationship between teacher and student. And this teacher requires so much qualifications. And student also needs so much qualification. So one of the benefits of Guru Yoga practice is, first of all, the benefit is that it is very simple. Because it is faith-based practice. When I say faith, it means the teacher is going to share all the essential practice, how to do it, based on one's direct experience. So for a student, if there is a trusted relationship, then it's really simple. I'm not against with that. I find it very, very practical. Why bother analyzing and doing so much study and read so many books and practice all kinds of different things? If you find someone who is qualified, with whom you have no ethical issues, very trusted, and very genuine connections, then it's very simple, very effective. So let me share you how I bought my TV. So Bob was in the process of buying television. And I used the Guru Yoga practice for that. Because I asked Bob, have you done the research? Did you do all the research? And I think he said, yes, I have done, I will compare this. So I don't want to engage any of those analytical process. It's really useless for me to compare and do the research and go to the store many times and go round and could not make the decisions. And so I asked, what are you buying? And he said, he's buying this television, and we went together. And Bob says he wants to buy this. And I said, well, I'm going to buy that. And I actually bargained a little bit. That was very funny. Bargained with the best salesperson. And so I think we got some bargaining awards.
Yeah,
so
not many people bargain this much.
Yeah. but then Bob himself actually did not practice the Guru Yoga style, because he practiced what Buddhists calls, he uses first analytical approach, compare, do research, and he did this, and that leads to actually buying it. Okay. So I'm just saying that it has its own place, its own time, and usefulness, but have to be very careful. But I find it, if I find a teacher with whom I feel I want to become like the teacher, or I want to learn everything what that teacher, and of course, reassessing every 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, how it is doing, and making sure that I don't get injured by that simple, direct path. Okay? So I'm not against, I'm not supporting, but I'm just sharing the possibilities. So basically, becoming practical when we need to follow and then follow, but when we need to analyze, then we analyze. There's no rigid approach, only following or only analyzing. So we need to have both. All right. So at the end, now I want to mention what I think might be useful for the Westerners, like yourself, Now I can be also Westerner. I don't fit well with the Tibetan society, and now I have identity crisis. So I look different, I talk different, and I say, I'm with you, and you may think, oh no, you're not. You look different, and you talk different. And I go to Tibetan society, they say, now you live 25 years in West, and you will not fit with us. No, they didn't say, but that's a possibility. So anyhow, depending on where your life is, okay, and how much time you have, but if you are working and do not have much time, first of all, whatever teaching and practice that motivates you, inspire you, you really engage that make that as your preliminary practice, okay? But my personal thought is, I find I'm making Nalanda or creating mantra practice, and that mantra practice is mindfulness and Shinne practice. Okay? That is what I'm doing now. I'm not focusing on the traditional Tibetan preliminary practice, although I see the benefit of reciting 100 times of some saying that I actually learned from Kenzie, my little daughter, who watches Daniel Neber. And it has a great themes, and it continues teaching Lojong. And one time, the whole theme for the show is turn around, look something good. Turn around, look for something good, because we have tendency to look for the negative. But anyhow, so I actually thought for a long time, because I am here now and thinking what would be really helpful. So at this point, I thought the mindfulness practice, self-compassion that are related, and Shinne practice. And then practice of Lojong. That includes Lojong, meaning mind training. That includes practice of compassion, loving kindness. And of course, include some actual services if you can. And then, if you feel that these are helping for you, and if you want something different, then you talk with me or talk with your teacher and just share, I'm here and now I feel I need a different practice or different level or different version. So you just really need to talk and be active. I guess in the West, you're expected to be assertive. Independent and assertive. So you have to be assertive to whoever is designated teacher and really instead of passively just going along, you really become more assertive and be serious. Not too serious, but serious enough to do the practice and able to assess and reprogramming or redeveloping your individual spiritual practice. Yes?
So how's Tonglen for Westerners?
That is one of the practice that is popular in the West. One confusing, because that is very, very advanced practice. If we are doing the traditional Tonglin practice, Tonglin is giving and taking, if you are not familiar, The actual practice of Tonglen is switching self-cherishing and other cherishing. That's the message behind that. So it's a very, very advanced practice. So because of that, in order to do Tonglen practice, first you cultivate loving kindness and compassion as a preliminary practice, then you do the Tonglen. And I will show you how you can do it. So when you take someone's uncomfortable experiences, suffering and pain, without a foundation, even through imagination, we cannot take. That would be very difficult. So because of that, out of compassion, the compassion that I defined earlier, then we imagine taking someone's unwanted. Okay? And now, if we give our positive qualities out of loving kindness, wanting others to be happy and have the source of happiness, and then you give out. So out of loving kindness, compassion as a basis, preliminary practice, and then do the actual Tonglen practice, and then do the dedication. And I will just give you some kind of preview of our retreat. So if I want to, let's say I'm a Bodhisattva practice, I'm doing Tonglen practice, and I want to integrate that, if possible, the final stages of my life, at the last breath. So, able to do that. So that's what we were talking, okay? Any other questions? Yes?
When you mentioned the 100,000 practices,
yes.
I guess that doesn't mean you have to do it in one sitting, right? I
mean,
you can make like an, if you want to try it, and
right.
You can make like a schedule or something?
Yeah, you can. That's why you have a mala.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a mala or counter, and you can do like 100 times and then take break, or 20 times, 50, and you keep record. And these numbers are just a technique. Like, for example, in Tibetan traditions, there is a concept of 3 year, 3 month, 3 days retreat. And also concept of reciting 100,000 refuge prayers or vows, or doing prostration. So all of these are, the purpose of all of these is to form the habit. So if you are able to form the habit after reciting 100 times of refuge, and you have a regular structure, it comes naturally, and it's engaging, then you're done. So don't need 100,000 times. Okay? Like, for example, Om Mani Padme Hum. So if you recite that many times, and next time if someone cut you off, how do you say, I still struggle? And instead of cussing that person, you might say, Om Mani Padme Hum. So that's much better. So it's just that is example of a verbal purification. And yes, Claire, what question do you have?
When you were talking, switch to dedication, and you were talking about thoughts that we assume or consider as our best wishes.
Yes.
I sort of interpreted that could be aspirations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you turn your aspirations to a preliminary, like when you're
yeah.
thinking about positive qualities
right.
that you want to
yeah.
to work on, so that your meditation
right.
that you
can right.
do your aspirations ahead of time?
Yes,
as a preliminary?
Yes, you can do any time, actually. You could do any time. And especially we do the dedication and the auspicious thoughts at the end is actually it's in terms of this current practice, it is the end, but the very end is the beginning. So if we end that way, then it motivates us to resume next time. So it's going through cycle. So more positive cycles we create, more effective, stronger it gets. So that's the idea. So you can do aspiration prayers, any stages, and especially at the beginning. Okay. Any other questions on Moindru preliminary practice or whatever I share with you? Yes?
Geshe, when we practice, are we ever not doing preliminary practices?
Oh, the preliminary practice that is recommended by traditional Tibetan practices?
No, what I mean is, I always, you know, when I say preliminary, this is what you're getting warmed up for the game, you know?
Yeah.
And it sounds like that what I thought was the game was just getting warmed up.
Game is what?
Well, preliminary practices, I thought, would prepare you for a main practice.
Right, that's true. That is true.
Do we ever get to the point where do we practice a main practice? Seems like we're always involved with preliminary practice.
Yeah. Yes, and that's what I learned from Denshin Rinpoche. So Denshin Rinpoche and his teacher, was born in 1864 and passed away in 1941, just the beginning of communist Chinese invasion in Tibet, especially in Kham, where he was born. So this teacher is considered as enlightened being.
His name?
Nawang Lepa. And Rinpoche is a direct student of this teacher. And what I learned from Rinpoche, Denshin Rinpoche, when I was with him closely, he and his root teacher both emphasize preliminary practices. But they give advanced teachings because these were requested by them, by others. But their own practice is doing lots of preliminary practices. As I mentioned earlier, that many of the preliminary practices are really the actual practices. Because taking refuge, that includes Buddha as a result, Dharma as a path, and Sangha as a support. That itself is good enough, because path includes everything. So it doesn't mean that we have to start from the preliminary. First, you start from any directions, wherever the interest is coming from. And if you want to expand it, then you find what are the preliminary practices for this. And then you do the preliminary practice. Okay. So doing preliminary practice, as I shared earlier, I have this, especially recent years, I've been sharing this idea, which is called infallible. Infallible law of causality, I guess. I find myself so much excitement when I see that all the cause conditions are there and there's no obstacles. And then I notice the result is bound to happen. And no authority, no system can block that. So that is the same idea that coming up preliminary practice, after you explore, after you go for shopping, like meditation shoppings, teaching shoppings, then you really settled with the preliminary practice, then you are really settled. But of course, you need to reassess, not to fool ourselves that I got this treasure and when it is not a treasure. So we have to reassess and then see what happens. Okay. Any other questions, concerns? Yes.
Like usually after meditation on Thursday that we have the discussion, you say a lot that our actual practice is when we stand up from our cushions and we live our lives.
Right.
Like all we do during the day.
Right.
So considering that all we do in our regular quotidianity is our practice.
Right.
Would you consider like it's a good idea, like maybe when you start your day,
right,
do a type of preliminary
right
practice.
Right.
And before going to sleep, do
right
a closing practice?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So let me show you how I do. And because I'm doing it now, Kenzie is able to recite. I'm so amazed. Kenzie has exceeded all the Dharma students. So, so I will first recite refuge prayer and bodhicitta, like Sankhya Chöso. That's the one verse practice. And then I recite the bodhicitta, aspiration of bodhicitta, and then I go. Now I do this in my car, tell you true. So I take Kenze, that's how Kenze learns, but if I asked her to do it, she might resist. So I just do it. I don't say to her to do it, because that may not work. So I just do it. And now, the minute I reverse, she knows in Tibetan, first reverse, and then refuge prayers. So these days, I do not lead. I reverse, and she starts. She starts by herself. So the refuge and bodhicitta, and then the four verses of bodhicitta, and then prayers of root teacher, Padin Zaya, that's root teacher. And then I started one homage prayer of Manjushri, and I recite, and now she is reciting. So I start that, that's my preliminary practice, and then I get to my work, and then do the work, hopefully maintaining some intention, motivation, awareness, and purpose, trying to help others as best I can, and then do dedication at the end. So that way, then the whole day, it's like you go to bed with some kind of positive thoughts, aspiration, and the whole sleep is considered as wholesome deeds until you wake up. So until work ends, it may become actual practice and do the dedication of that. So practice doesn't mean that we have to do longer. It could mean just bring awareness instantly within 1 minute. 12 o'clock comes, instantly stopping and notice. And that could be your practice. So, okay? Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What are the elements of a dedication prayer?
What are the elements? Meaning,
yeah,
what type of
dedication prayer?
Say again.
What makes a dedication
prayer? Oh yes, yes. I'm not sure the concept of dedication in the Western tradition, but in Buddhist tradition, the concept of dedication is whatever helpful deeds that we have accumulated is expended to a larger universal context or benefit. So broadening. So it is like whatever deeds we do, we will do dedication prayer. So it's like a dewdrop. And doing dedication for a broader purpose, objectives, freeing from suffering, or bringing happiness or peaceful environment for everyone. See, now I have broadened, expanded. And so now the idea is, now you have deposit somewhere in trustable, reliable, universal bank. And you can access that next time with the interest. Really, that's the idea. So it will not. So if there's no dedication, then it ends there. It ends. There's no continuing energy. Okay? So that's the dedication. Any other questions? So, have you got information about preliminary practice, or you got something else? Totally. That happens most time when you come here, right? Okay. All right. So let's do dedication prayer and we'll end for today's talk. Okay. So those of you know, engage. If you are not sure, still engage and do your own dedication prayers and aspirational thoughts. Okay? All right. Jambai bawe chedai gamba tang kundu sambo te yang te shen te dai gun ye je so da lo che ge wai di da tam je ra du ngo de so xie be ja wai tam je ye ngo wai gan lai cho du nga ba Give it a white good young son boy, church, Radu. Thank you again.
Thank you.
It's really warm now. Warm up to ourselves, right?